Welcome to the Global Prosperity Wonkcast. I'm Lawrence McDonald, and my guests today are Michael Clemens, he's a senior fellow here at the Center for Global Development, and Todd Moss, who's a senior fellow and vice president. And gentlemen, I brought you on the show today because you are what I would describe as Millennium Development Goal skeptics. Does that sound fair?
Absolutely.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's not to like about the Millennium Development Goals? We're going to cut poverty in half. We're going to get more kids educated. We're going to reduce maternal mortality. We're going to improve health. This is like not liking mother and apple pie and the American flag. What are you guys, a couple of curmudgeons?
I think nobody's against any of those goals. They're terrific goals. I think what Michael and our colleague Charles Kenny and I have tried to look at is how have the goals been interpreted and used in practice. They were started as a way really in the mid-90s when aid budgets were under tremendous pressure as a way to try to generate more aid and more excitement about let's try to actually achieve something with aid because we're not sure what we've achieved over the previous couple of decades. And it's been tremendously successful in getting the aid budget up. But what I think it's also not done is really focused the development goals in a way that's useful for countries. It's done it in a way where these big grand goals have been interpreted as national goals, which have been virtually impossible for a large number of countries that have been doing quite well. So, you know, operationalizing the MDGs has not been easy.
Can I expand on that point of operationalizing them? One of the great benefits of the goals from the beginning was seen as that they are quantitative. It is a certain target to be met on a certain date. So it's not just mom and apple pie. It's that mom must make 29 apple pies by 3 p.m. And numbers really matter because some of the goals that are being asked for are astonishingly ambitious in historical context.
Well, isn't it reasonable to, you know, set the bar high and countries will do their best? And, I mean, wouldn't we like the number of people who are hungry in the world to be cut in half? And after all, they started in 1990, so it's not, doesn't seem like it's impossible to reduce the number of hungry people by half over 20 years.
I can see, so there are stretch goals and there are shatter goals. I can see the benefits of aiming for the stars and maybe you'll hit the barn. But I see drawbacks to those goals as well. Africa has traditionally been portrayed as a place where nothing good happens. Many people would tell you that aid always goes down the rat hole and nothing comes out of Africa. And shatter goals have that drawback. They by constantly portraying failure, even in cases where countries are making enormous progress within their own context by their own standards, we contribute to that vision of inevitable disaster.
Michael, one of the things I like a lot about your work is the historical perspective. And you wrote a paper, The Long Walk to School, International Education Goals in Historical Perspective. And of course, education goals are prominent among the MDGs. What did you find when you looked back at historical rates of progress in education as compared with the goals that had been set out in the MDGs?
Well, there's been amazing progress. So the second Millennium Development Goal is for all countries in the world to have 100% primary completion for children aged 6 to 11 by 2015, so just 5 years from now. There are many countries that have made astonishing progress in that area. Some of the poorest countries in the world, some of the poorest countries in Africa, Burkina Faso, Guinea, Niger, Mali, all of these countries are countries that still right now have around 50% primary completion or less, but they've doubled that number over the last 10 or 15 years.
So they went from 25 to 50.
Exactly.
And they're going to be deemed a failure on the MDGs because they didn't get all kids in school.
If they don't reach 100% by 5 years from now, and I just want to point out that it took the United States over 100 years to get from roughly that level of primary completion to full primary completion. Around 1790, 1800, we had 40% of kids going to primary school. Around 1905, we hit 100%. That's not a reasonable standard. 5 years, whether West Africa can do that in 5 years is not a reasonable standard for development. That's not shooting for the stars. That's just saying you will fail no matter what you do.
And do you think that there are costs to that perception? So you have very rapid rates of progress that are then portrayed as failure? Todd?
Well, you know, I think obviously that would be a huge cost. If you're the education minister of Burkina Faso and you're actually doing quite well, but everyone keeps telling you what a great failure you are, that's not only debilitating internally when you're trying to argue for more resources and better policies within your country, but also it creates a very difficult dialogue with some of your external supporters. And I think that that's a kind of bigger problem with the MDGs is this link to aid. In a sense, it's created this this perception that if we can just figure out how much money we need to spend, we can achieve these goals. And so there are even costing studies. And it was actually these costing studies that helped justify tremendous increases in aid. And the idea that we can achieve these outcomes by spending more money is just false. We just know that it's not necessarily financial constraints that are holding countries back. Sure, there may be financing issues in some areas, but spending more money doesn't get you what you want, doesn't get you there, but it does create that perception that's really the problem.
So what do you think the big messages are going to be coming out of the UN General Assembly and the, I guess it's an MDG summit, heads of state are going to converge on New York and they're all going to stand up and presumably recommit to these goals, right? And they're going to be under pressure to explain what it is they're going to do to help reach them.
Right? Well, I think it's absolutely a stone cold lock that what they're going to do is argue for greater aid budgets. That is always the purpose of these summits. That's the purpose of the MDGs. They will be arguing we need more money.
And now, who's going to make that argument? The recipients, the donors, the aid community, the World Bank? I mean,
I think you're going to hear it from all of the above. The question is going to be, and what I genuinely think the interesting question out there is going to be, is the argument going to be, look at how much success we've had over the last 10, 15 years. Look how well we're doing. Look at the value you're getting for your additional assistance. Therefore, we need to pile on this success. Or is it going to fall back to what we've seen historically, which is, look how terrible it is. It's a development emergency. And given the global economic conditions, therefore, we have to squeeze much more aid out at a time when virtually every donor is going to be cutting back on their aid budget. So is it going to be a positive message that development can be successful, or is it going to be negative, that the sky is falling?
So I think we know where you would come out. Michael, if you were going to be scripting Ban Ki-moon's address, you know, given that the goals are there, given that we know from your work and others that they're historically unrealistic, what should the Secretary General say to the Assembly?
What I would like to see is a focus on success. So Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, a former finance minister of Nigeria and a great thinker on Africa, has said that if you want to help Africa, do business in Africa. And I pointing out that Africa has failed yet again, that it's fallen short on all of these indicators, despite all of the aid that's gone there, is the kind of thing that creates a negative image for the countries that we would like to see progress in. It's the kind of thing that deters people from going and doing business there. It's great for getting people to raise aid budgets and go do aid projects there. It's counterproductive to some of the other things we'd like to see going on. For that, you need a brand. You need an image of success. And I would love to see the speeches around the summit portraying what has really happened in lots of Africa and lots of parts of Africa, which is enormous progress.
Our colleague Ben Leo, as you know, has created something, a new paper called MDG Progress Index, and is in the process of busily producing country-level scorecards. And one of the things that really surprised me when he presented that work internally was the lack of data that corresponds to the goals, that the goals were really designed in a way, although they're quantitative, they didn't then say, okay, if this is the goal, let's make sure that we collect the data. And in some cases, they didn't even define exactly which indicators matched which goals. So Ben has had to go back and do that in a retroactive kind of way. He's done what I think is a remarkable job finding data that matches with the goals reasonably well, and then using some statistical techniques managed to produce scorecards for these countries, but the database is quite thin. I would have thought that going forward, if they're going to be a new round of goals, that it might make sense to not only make them more realistic, but also to be clear about what it is that we're measuring.
Absolutely, yes.
Do you see any prospect that that would happen?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the answer, are we going to reach the MDGs? The simple answer is we will have no idea if we've met them. And if we're going to have another round of goals, and
we will have no idea if we've met them.
No, we will have no idea. There's no several of the indicators. We have no idea what the baseline was in 1990 that we're supposed to be measuring
maternal
against.
Maternal mortality in particular.
Yeah, so there's no way of knowing. There's some pretty good modeling out there. We have pretty, you know, in some cases there's some good. Even on the poverty numbers, the poverty numbers get thrown around. How is Ghana doing this year versus last year? When you look at how those data are actually constructed and how they're estimated, we really just do not.
So we're going to have heads of state, heads of government from around the world converging on the UN in New York, engaging in several days worth of breastbeating about how we need to do a better job, presumably spending, I can only imagine, $100 million to get them all there and put them in hotels. Anyway, many tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
What if they just canceled the whole thing and put the money into data collection? Wouldn't we be better off?
Well, I think we could ask that about almost all international summits, you know, whether the money could be better spent. And probably in most cases, it would be better spent elsewhere. But I think the point is that, you know, despite some of our criticisms of the MDGs, we are stuck with them. We have the Millennium Development Goals. There will almost certainly be another round of MDGs. So I think it's the important outcome from the summit is not so much an assessment of where we are or new aid pledges, but trying to think about a sensible way for the international community to move forward, to have goals that are useful to countries and to the donor agencies and to businesses, but that are in some way more meaningful than what we've got right now.
And Michael, would those be country-specific goals?
Absolutely. That's the only meaningful way to judge progress. If school enrollments have doubled in Burkina Faso over the last 10 or 15 years, that is a spectacular success by any meaningful standard. And to say that they have failed in any sense by not reaching 100% primary completion within an astonishingly short period of time, I don't see how that helps motivate anybody to do anything valuable.
And how would you go about then constructing a set of country goals? I mean, part of me thinks, well, that sounds like a great full employment program for Beltway Bandit consultants, that they could, you know, be set loose and go and construct all of these country goals in consultation with the developing country governments.
Not at all. It would be something very easy to do. I mean, it's true that for many of the indicators, baseline data are difficult to get, like maternal mortality in particular. The 1990 data are thin and low quality. For many of the other indicators, just establishing a trend over time is not so hard to do, and it could be done lots of ways. It could be, a 50% improvement on your past rate of progress over the last 10 years should be regarded as enormous success. Or even maintaining your rate of progress if terrible things are going on, such as wars or natural disasters nearby or within your country. Context is incredibly important.
Seems to me like it's a little hard to get, I don't know, I'm thinking of Bono going out before a bunch of people at a big rock concert and saying, you know, let's all rally around a 50% rate of the 50% improvement in the rate of progress. It's not the same as let's make poverty history.
Sure, but
let's get all kids in school. These are things that are more emotive. It's like, yeah, every kid should get to go to school. Who would disagree with that, right?
But the benchmark could be something incredibly transparent, like the African average. You know, that here are countries that are doing way better than other countries in their continent, or just a big improvement on your own trend, or faster than Europe did it 100 years ago. These are things that people can understand. They're not too wonky.
I mean, I think the point is that you're not going to have actual quantitative goals that are going to make sense that are also going to be good bumper stickers for the one campaign. In a sense, I think you want to try to have, you're going to have both. They're going to have to be separate. If you need something that's sort of motivational, that people could just sort of intuitively understand, like getting kids in school, that makes sense. But that should not be what Burkina Faso's education target is. Those should be separate processes. They can be connected, and in some sense they should have the same spirit. But to say all kids should be in school, that's great for a bumper sticker. It's great for the U2 concert. It's great to get, you know, young people involved in development issues. But it's not helpful in the dialogue between the Burkina Faso education minister and their development partners. That's why I think we need to separate those two out.
It doesn't tell the ministry what to do. It doesn't tell the donors what kind of innovation and aid might create better conditions for that to happen. It helps very little in that regard.
Yeah.
This seems to make a lot of sense to me. It also suggests a degree of coordination within the development community that might be hard to attain.
Yeah, but you know, there's this fetish that everything has to be super coordinated. The market doesn't work that way. I don't see why the aid business needs to work that way. You know, countries and their development partners should agree on objectives and goals. That's how they can agree whether what they're doing together is working or not. That does not need to be the exact same thing as what the NGO community uses to try to raise public awareness. Those can be completely separate things. What I do think the interesting question that will also come out of the summit is, are we going to stick with the same goals and just say, okay, here's the new number for 2025? Or are they really going to open the box and think, all right, well, what other objectives might we want to think about? You know, they're quite health and education heavy right now. I think if you were going to have a single additional goal, or, you know, if you're going to really focus on something that really mattered to most people and most countries, I think you would probably pick a jobs goal. So the question would be, is there going to be a job creation goal that comes out of the Millennium Development Goals Summit? Probably not, partly because governments and aid agencies are not that good at creating jobs. But that's the kind of thing you might imagine could go forward. You could imagine something maybe on access to electricity, something that is on the mind of every leader in a developing country, and something that everybody could tangibly appreciate. So I think there's both the numbers and, you know, what kinds of indicators are we going to look at going forward.
That's right. There's water in the MDGs, isn't there? There's access to water and access to sanitation, but I never thought about it. There's no electricity goal.
I don't think so. There have been so many sub-indicators that people have picked. There's more than 60 of them. So my guess, there's probably an electricity goal in there somewhere, but what's official and
not
what's not
at the level that there is for water.
Very marquee.
Right.
It's not one of the top eight. That's right.
What I would love to see would be a goal for economic progress. And I say that, I don't mean
GDP
to be...
GDP growth?
Yes. I don't mean to be simplistic or ideological about that. I say that for empirical reasons. So... I recently calculated the relationship between fertility, female fertility, and income per capita over the last 50 years. And in 1960, there was a negative relationship between those things. Fertility was lower in richer countries. And if you just maintain that exact same relationship and follow the economic growth that has occurred along that same curve, assuming no change in people's incentives or technology or anything, you find that half of the change in fertility that has occurred over the last 50 years, which is that fertility in developing countries has gone from 6 children per woman to about 2.5. Half of that epical change in the world came more or less just from economic growth. And we've seen enormous increases in these human development indicators, huge expansions in schooling in Africa, huge declines in child mortality all over the world, but very relatively little corresponding economic growth. Lots of places are getting much more educated and healthier and still poor. And if there's anything that the conventional wisdom seems to be that somehow human development has been underemphasized at the expense of economic development, but this is a point that Lant Pritchett of Harvard has made. And that I find really compelling. It's exactly the opposite, in fact. We've seen much more progress on human development than on economic indicators. And again, as Todd said, that's unlikely to come out of the summit because governments are not very good at doing that. Uganda would love to have Chinese-style growth rates, and nobody in or out of Uganda knows how to accomplish that. But this is the thing that deserves a greater emphasis, and for empirical reasons, this is the thing that seems to matter much more than anything else that we can do.
Michael, thanks very much. We had Michael Clemens and Todd Moss as guests on Global Prosperity Wonkast. We'll all be watching the MDG Summit in New York with great interest to see if your predictions come true, or maybe somebody up there will listen to your advice and somewhere at the margins make a slight change. This has been the Global Prosperity Wonkast from the Center for Global Development. You can find us online and on iTunes. Just search for Wonkast or CGD. If you have iTunes, I hope you'll subscribe to hear a new interview every week. Until next time, I'm Lawrence McDonald. Thanks for listening.